This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, American Airlines offers free TikTok access, but not without some controversy. A cargo flight returns to Narita with a fire indication, but the communication is less than smooth. Spirit Airlines melts down, canceling over 2,000 flights. A general aviation gallery is coming to the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, and aviation jet fuel shortages impact aerial firefighting operations. Also, we have an Across the Pond segment with Peter Johnson and managing editor of Aerospace Magazine, Tim Robinson. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 665 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and joining me is first David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian and military aviation expert.
Is this thing on? Check, 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 check. It's been so long since I've done this, I've completely forgotten what we're supposed to... What are we talking about tonight?
It's amazing how quickly you get out of practice. But, you know, one guy who's never out of practice is Max Trescott. He's host of Aviation News Talk podcast. He's a national CFI of the year. And, of course, he's an expert on learning to fly or purchase a Cirrus aircraft.
Hey, Max. Great to be back with you here. And, you know, I was just watching one of my favorite movies last night, the Blues Brothers. And I'm kind of wondering... When are we here on Airplane Geeks going to get the band back together? That's what I want to know.
That's a really, really good question, one that's been asked by others. So we can answer that right now and welcome back Rob Mark. Rob is previously the senior editor of Flying Magazine, and he publishes the Jetwine blog. Hi, Rob.
Hey, it's nice to be here. And I see the same old crowd is still hanging around. David? Max. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say Max again. Thank you for inviting me.
Rob, it's good to see you, although I haven't seen you in like a week.
That's right. That's when we recorded that that cool episode at EAA Radio that you never even mentioned to your listeners. We were conducting with you and I together. All when right. we're just starts, I know. But right. I'm not going to mention it because I'm not... concerned about it.
Okay. My apologies.
Okay. All right. But you have a cool camper, though. I have to tell you, if for anybody that hasn't seen that thing, it looks like a tank. It looks like a baby tank.
It's, it's well equipped for sure. People were calling that the Armageddon wagon at Oshkosh, but, we can talk about that later perhaps. But yeah, I'm in fact still. Gosh, I think I just finished week four of my road trip. Still not home. We'll be back in the home studio, by next time. Certainly, hopefully by Thursday's recording of UAV Digest with David. And so we're working hard to get back to our usual format. We've got some guests. We're filling the pipeline. So hopefully soon we'll be, like I say, back to our usual format. So for this episode, we've got some aviation news from the past week or so. Are you guys all ready?
Ready from the West.
Ready from the Midwest.
Ready from the East.
Our first item, this comes from, from American Airlines. American Airlines takes TikTok to new heights with free in-flight access for customers. So, of course, American Airlines provides some free in-flight Wi-Fi offerings, and they just added TikTok. Now, if you'll know what TikTok is, ask your kids. It's the popular social networking service that's owned by Chinese company ByteDance. And now on Viasat-equipped narrow-body aircraft, American lets you connect to TikTok free for 30 minutes. And there's a quote here from Clarissa Sebastian. She's American's managing director of premium customer experience and onboard products. That's kind of a mouthful. She says, faster Wi-Fi allows us to deliver diverse in-flight entertainment options and invest in innovative partnerships with platforms like TikTok. Customers play the lead role in helping us better understand what content they want during their in-flight experience. And TikTok is one of the platforms they love on the ground. And we're thrilled to work with Viasat to give customers free access to TikTok while they're in the air as well. I don't know. Do you think the typical American customer, American Airlines customer, is a TikTok user? Or is it just me that's kind of living in the past?
No, I don't think they are. In fact, I'm sitting here going, why are we talking about this? I just looked it up. The typical U.S. audience TikToker, 60% female, 40% male. 60% are between the ages of 16 and 24. 26% are between the ages of 25 and 44. So, yeah, it skews pretty young. And I would say it probably skews younger than the average, American Airlines customer. So I'm kind of surprised they're making a big deal about it.
I listen to TikTok or
watch
it. Watch,
Rob.
Oh, right. I watch TikTok. Right.
It's on your wrist, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, you watch the watch, right?
It's funny. Of all the things that for years we've all dealt with, there is no streaming on an airliner. We're not doing it, period, because it's too much bandwidth. And so this is the first thing American chooses to stream? I don't know. It sounds weird, but I think they're hoping their audience is going to skew younger eventually.
Ah, perhaps. Or maybe they're trying to just project that image of being, I don't know, hip or in tune with
youthful,
the times, perhaps?
Youthful exuberance?
Yes.
Well, and maybe it's a partnership with the owners of TikTok. Maybe they have put up some money and said, hey, we'll help pay some of the costs because we would like to promote our platform to more people who aren't currently using it.
Well, and the fact the platform can be done in packets of bits and bytes because the average TikTok is under 2 minutes. So, I mean, from a technological standpoint, it might actually be the fact that it's short things to stream, not necessarily, long hourly things that most people don't watch TikTok for more than a couple of minutes or, unless they happen to be a 14-year-old who's constantly obsessed with it. But
do you think they will support uploading to TikTok from the airplane? This way we could watch all of those fights and all the violence of passengers in real time now?
Absolutely, I think. I think absolutely you should be able to, though the upload speed means that you probably, it'll be like sending a postcard from Europe when we were growing up, that the upload will occur about 30 hours after your flight lands. But besides that, it'll be good.
All right, I've changed my position. I think TikTok on the airlines is going to be great.
Well, there is one guy who doesn't really take that position, and that's U.S. Senator Marco Rubio, the Republican from Florida. And he sent a letter to Doug Parker, the American Airlines chairman and CEO. He did this after American announced this innovative partnership with TikTok. And Senator Rubio says, as you know, in 2019, the U.S. government launched a national security review of TikTok due to data privacy and data security concerns, a review which remains active to this day. He goes on, by partnering with TikTok, American Airlines is now lending its brand credibility to a company that endangers national security and the data security of tens of millions of Americans, many of them minors. I urge you to suspend American Airlines' innovative partnership, quote unquote, with TikTok while the U.S. government completes its investigation into the national security risks posed by the Chinese-owned app.
Okay, I've reversed my position. I'm opposed.
You're opposed to it. I'm just wondering, just exactly what would the Chinese government or the Chinese military do with all of these millions of TikTok videos of people falling off their skateboard or dancing in their dining room? I don't know.
Show them to prisoners of political prisoners, perhaps? Or
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know. I still think it's very strange that they chose to partner up with TikTok. But I doubt very seriously Doug is going to change his ways based on what Marco Rubio has to say.
I guess we will see. Curious to see what the response is.
Yeah, and curious is kind of the word, you know, that was in my mind right now. The whole thing is kind of curious. It just doesn't seem like, you know, the kind of thing that I would have put on the top of my list of things to do to improve customer experience. But, hey, what the heck? I guess they'll try it and see how it works.
Especially considering how many flights American has been canceling, which I think comes up in another story. But we'll
see. It does. It does. But first, let's talk about an interesting video that we've watched on YouTube. This is about a national cargo Boeing 747-400 that was it departed from Tokyo's Narita Airport for Seoul, South Korea. And during the climb out at about 27,000 feet, they reported a fire indication in a cargo compartment. And this this video is sort of reconstructs the flight based on the ATC communications. But Max Trescott, it's kind of an interesting listen, a little bit concerning as well.
So it runs about 10 minutes. It's largely audio, though they did create a map that shows roughly the position of the aircraft and the turns that it's making. I looked it up. This incident was from July 29th, so you know it's very, very current and recent. And I think we all would agree that the communications were very ineffective between the pilots and the controllers. Now, interestingly, we were all talking about this just before we hit the record button, and Rob and I think, came up on opposite sides of it. I said, wow, you know, the pilots really did a bad job because never once did they say, mayday, mayday, mayday. They really were, it took them a long time to even include the word emergency. And so a lot of time was lost. Now, on the other hand, Rob, I think you were more focused on the controllers.
I think what I meant was not to be mutually exclusive, but I mean, they were both terrible. I mean, but you know what bugged me about the pilot's part is that I wondered if the crew kind of thought, it's probably a warning light failure or something like that. They didn't seem to be concerned. I mean, at least not to me from the tone of their voice. I would have probably been a little more emotional, but again, and when the controller could not understand what the pilots were saying, I can't believe it took the captain as long to say something. I forgot how long it was into it before he said, we've got a fire or something like that. 4 minutes, 5 minutes. It just, neither one of the groups seemed to really feel very concerned about this.
Yeah, there was a lot of repeating, you know, asking a question, hearing the answer, then the question getting asked again, the answer given again, back and forth, back and forth. And at one point, after the controller asked several times if there was any hazardous material on board, the flight crew said yes. And then the controller had to ask, well, what? And they said lithium batteries. If I had, I don't know, if I had a, you know, a fire in the hold indicator going off and I knew that I had lithium batteries in the hold, yeah, you would think that it would be, you know, a little bit more concerning than it seemed to be. But
well, sure, look at that 7-4 that went in and was it in Germany somewhere, I think? This is maybe 10 years ago, and they had a lithium ion battery fire in the cargo hold and the airplane crash before the crew could get the thing on the ground. But again, that was kind of my point. How you know what's in the back and you think you've got a fire back there and you're arguing with the controllers, mayday, we've got a fire. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't get that.
No, but they never did say mayday. That's the problem. Go ahead, David.
Oh, I didn't. I must have missed that then. Yes. Yeah. I guess we were hoping.
Okay. You know, you guys are always talking about aviate, then communicate. Am I right?
Yes.
Sure.
And you guys are complaining that there wasn't enough communicating. Maybe they should have been focusing on the flying.
You know, but the whole time they kept flying further away from the airport. Now, if it were me, I would have said, "Mayday, mayday, mayday, I have already started returning back to the airport."
You know, thank you.
Why continue to be polite and wait for them to give you permission to make that turn? Once you've declared an emergency, you were allowed to basically violate any regulation you need to deal with the extent of the emergency. So, yeah, sure, you're not following your clearance, but you're trying to save your life. So, yeah, I was extremely frustrated that I didn't see a level of urgency that I thought the situation required.
Did we ever find out, did the aircraft actually have a fire?
I looked it up. The aircraft was on the ground for 4 days and then it departed. So who knows what happened during those 4 days. If it did have a fire, it must have been, you know, fairly confined to, you know, a particular area.
You know, on the communication, it was interesting because the controllers had, especially the woman at the beginning of the video, had a very strong, very heavy accent, Asian accent, that was somewhat difficult for me to understand. I guess probably if you fly in that region, that part of the world, you probably become more familiar with, you know, an accent like that. But it was, the English was just below the level that I would have expected, I guess I'm saying.
Well, and I think on the pilot side, they kept repeating that they had an enunciator that said, fire cargo aft. You know, I think probably aft is not one of those words that gets taught to controllers. I think it would have been sufficient to say fire, you know, and not continue to, you know, add words in there that controllers might not know and don't need to know.
That's right. And then this, at least for Americans, the controller handbook says something in there about if you can't figure out a good way to communicate the situation, just use plain words. You know, we're on fire, or we are turning back, or something that is much more, much less difficult to confuse.
And Rob's so subtle. Did you get that pun, ladies and gentlemen? He wanted him to use plain words.
Oh, I missed it.
We all missed it.
Ah, right. I think now I remember this. I remember this show. Yes. All right. Yeah. That guy.
The band is back together. And the music we make, well, you know, questionable.
Can you say A380? No, okay. We won't go there.
No.
Oh, all right. Oh, we're going to start that. You know, the nice thing about family is when you get them back together after a couple of months, you know, and you haven't seen each other, you haven't talked to each other, you know, the first 15 minutes or so are the pleasantry, and then it immediately reverts back to fighting and squabbling like you've always done.
That's okay, absolutely true. Okay.
All right. Next up, Spirit Airlines has been in the news recently a lot, along with words like meltdown and canceling thousands of flights. Spirit Airlines has canceled more than 2,000 flights all across the United States, and it's been a disaster. There have been long lines of passengers trying to find flights. We see it at Fort Lauderdale International Airport in Florida. At one point, the wait to rebook was as long as 2.5 hours on a particular day, and the line grew from there. So what's the reason for all these canceled flights? Well, Spirit says it was caused by weather, by technology outages, by travel volume, and staffing shortages. One of the problems was crews timing out with delays, the inability of the system to handle the increasing volume of passengers. Apparently, a number of crews timed out, so that just compounds the problem. But it really got pretty bad.
Poor planning.
Poor planning.
Oh, I mean, a lot of problems.
Yeah, and it wasn't just, as you said, it wasn't just one, but I can only speak to the crew part. And, of course, there was a pilot shortage before the pandemic. And then when the pandemic hit, they went, oh, well, we don't need pilots anymore. No big deal. We're going to park the airplanes. And then this ramp-up caught almost everybody napping, all the airlines. And but I think this one at Spirit started off as a weather problem, if I'm not mistaken, but then it just intensified because, you know, when pilots are sitting around on the ground waiting to go, they get a three-hour delay that gets tacked onto their flight time. And if they are only allowed to do so many hours a day and they can't even start the flight if they know they're not going to be able to complete it, they go, sorry, guys, got to get some new pilots. Well, then you've got to find reserves, and then you've got to wait for them to get there. And it just got crazy, but it wasn't just Spirit, as I recall.
Well, Spirit, I think, was the worst. I've been, for the last week, following Pete Montine, who's one of the cable reporters, who's the aviation reporter. And I'm just going back through his Twitter. 4 days ago, he said that they are now in the fifth straight days of cancellations, and people are furious. 3 days ago, he said that roughly one-third of today's schedule has been canceled. Cancellations peaked at 450 cancellations yesterday. Day later, he said that 22% of the Saturday schedule had been canceled. And as we're recording us now, he says Spirit cancellations are tapering off after a bad week of, quote, overlapping operational challenges. 91 Sunday flights are 11% canceled so far. And anyway, I think that they may have started out with one problem, but I think the big issue was that they just lacked the resources to deal with the cascading problems. They are a low-cost carrier. One of the ways they keep costs low is to have less staff. Also, they're in less of a position to recover because many of the locations that they travel to only have a single flight a day to that location, whereas you look at someone like American, they may have four flights to the same location per day, which means if one flight gets canceled, well, you've got lots of room to put people on those other three flights. Here, you may not have room to put people on the one flight you have 24 hours later. And they don't serve some of these locations every day of the week. So there have been literally thousands of passengers who've been stranded at airports, unable to get back. So, yeah, I think this has been just a colossal meltdown for Spirit in particular. It's been much less worse for the other airlines. Of course, the big question will be, will people leave Spirit in droves because of this? And I think the answer we've talked about in the past is, heck no. As long as the ticket is a quarter cheaper, 25 cents less, they'll continue to fly Spirit.
Yeah, most.
I think you're right. And of course, Spirit also doesn't have the interline agreements that the majors do, which means that if American loses a flight, they can try and get you booked on Delta or United or Southwest or something. But Spirit is they're all out there by themselves, and this is what people say. Well, you wanted a cheap flight. This is what you get.
Yeah, yeah, and you know you don't have to go back too many months to recall experts, analysts, and others predicting that the recovery for the airlines would take until 2023, and some people even said 2024, right? And
oops.
Yeah, so I imagine that airlines and you know the industry is sort of planning around that kind of slow, gradual recovery, and so having this jump back as quickly as it has, at least so far. Of course, who knows where it'll go? I mean, we tend to overshoot these things, right? So, variants are rearing their heads in various countries, and there's no guarantee that something like what we saw last year could reoccur. Difficult times to make planning if you're a corporation.
This isn't over yet either. I mean, just because this happened this time and they seem to be getting back on track doesn't mean it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
And TSA reported just a few days ago that they had the fewest number of passengers boarding airplanes since sometime in June. So there's been a little bit of a turndown in passengers. So we'll see if that continues. But if it does, that'll probably take a little bit of the pressure off of the airline since they won't have quite as many people to deal with.
Right. All right. From Air and Space Magazine. A new gallery celebrates the variety that is general aviation. And this is kind of great news. The Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum has a new general aviation gallery that they are scheduled to open in 2022. And this is the Thomas W. Haas We All Fly Gallery. And the intent is that it will tell the story of GA, how it impacts everyday life, how it's influenced society, and it will feature interactive exhibits and audio-visual displays. So that's kind of interesting. I don't recall ever seeing sort of a GA focused gallery of this magnitude.
I remember a Cessna 150 sitting on the main floor somewhere. All by itself. And that was the only, I don't know, that's just one of the ones, but I know there was a King Air hanging up, I think, or something, but you're right, not that much, except I see Jerry Mach's 180 in there, but again, there wasn't that much of a focus on GA, I don't believe.
Yeah.
Well, I think GA is the poor stepchild of aviation. If you look at where all the volume and the dollars and all the money is, it's in both the airlines, it's in the military, to some extent in the public service sector, police helicopters. And then everything else is kind of GA, which is kind of funny. That's a segment of the industry that's really defined as the absence of other parts of the industry. So I think it doesn't have nearly as much in common as the other segments of the industry do. And so, yeah, it does sort of get left behind a little bit, I think, whenever people start talking about aviation.
And this is, got the name Thomas W. Haas, We All Fly Gallery, because the Thomas W. Haas Foundation contributed $10 million towards this. So I don't know much about that foundation. In fact, I don't know anything about that foundation, actually. But that's where the funding came from. But that, since we're talking about the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, we probably should mention that as we record this episode, the Innovations in Flight event is still scheduled for Saturday, August 21st at the Air and Space Museum's Udvar-Hazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Of course, we attend every year, except last year because the event wasn't held. This year's event is going to be very limited due to policies put in place by the Smithsonian regarding the COVID pandemic. And there will be no special indoor programs, as has been the case in the past, including us. There is not timed entry for the museum itself, but there are timed tickets required for the outside displays. Now, you can get those free online at the museum website, and they are for either the morning, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., or the afternoon, 12:30 to 2:30.
I think there was 600 for the 2:30 when I looked this afternoon, and 300 for the 10:30 admission.
So,
so there's still plenty of tickets out there for everyone to go. And besides, it's the Air and Space Museum. There's plenty of things to look at. There's an X-wing now in the Restoration Hall that flew in over, and other new exhibits. So, I mean, it's the Air and Space Museum. If you're in the area and having other aircraft magically appear for the afternoon, it's a celebration of things with wings.
That's right.
Rotary or so it's fun. Besides, I'm kind of partial to the hashtag, but that's just me.
Hillel is going to be flying his plane in. I'll be attending. David is as well. Now, as you probably know from previous years, we meet up at the Red Robin in Chantilly, Virginia, at the end of the afternoon. And at least as of this time, we are planning to do that as well for anyone who'd like to attend. I'm thinking the group will probably be smaller than in the past, but that's fine. Again, it's the Red Robin in Chantilly, Virginia. It's at Chantilly Crossing Lane. After the event. But things could change. You never know. So for updates, you can watch the Innovations in Flight channel in our Slack listener team or follow us on Twitter at Airplane Geeks. And if there's any changes to any of that, we'll let you know. All right. Fuel shortages. Aviation fuel shortage could affect aerial firefighting. So air travel dropped. We had a pandemic. The supply of jet aviation fuel was scaled back. Now we have air travel rebounding, but the logistics process for fuel has not. Thus, we have some shortages. And that includes the fuel supply for firefighting and some air tanker bases are in a little bit of difficulty. Although, as this one article points out, one thing that kind of contributes to this is that you don't necessarily know where a wildfire is going to explode, and it can happen suddenly. And when that does, then the demand for fuel in that area can really soar. So it's difficult to predict, when you're going to need a lot of fuel to support aerial firefighting. And it's not just aerial firefighting that's been impacted by this. The airlines have. We've seen American Airlines in the past taking some actions because of fuel shortages.
So we have supply chain issues all over this country as a result of the pandemic. All you have to do is go to Costco and you find shortages of this, that, and the other. This is yet another thing that's been impacted by the pandemic. We all know that fuel of all kinds dropped in volume tremendously last year. And part of what happened was that the refineries started switching the pipelines over and started pumping more gasoline and diesel and less jet fuel. So now there's less jet fuel going through those pipelines. Obviously, they've got to switch that around a little bit. There's been a shortage of trucks and truck drivers. And you add that all up, and hard to believe, but we have supply shortages of jet fuel. Now, this first started to emerge in the Northwest. I would say I started seeing this probably a couple of weeks ago. But now there are reports of other parts of the country that are having shortages of jet fuel as well. As you mentioned, some of the airlines are dealing with it by tankering fuel. So it used to be airlines would take just the minimal amount of fuel they had to on a particular trip because it costs money to carry excess fuel that you're not going to use. On the other hand, you don't want your aircraft stuck at an airport that has no fuel. So now they're loading up the airplanes with more fuel so that they don't have to get fuel at airports that have shortages. So it's really pretty amazing dynamic that's kind of played out over the last few weeks.
See, for a minute there, you said tankering, and I had this image of a KC-135 coming up to an American Airlines 707 or 747 and refueling. It was sort of like, what? No, but I know that it's taking your own fuel with you.
Yeah,
but again, supply shortages from what you just mentioned, Max. I mean, we're seeing that everywhere, and that's what we were just talking about with the Spirit thing too. It's not just stuff; it's people, it's technology that's behind. So people like to think, well, I don't have to wear a mask anymore, so we're kind of back to normal. But I don't think we're back there yet.
Do you think there's a shortage of peanuts? Or to quote Dan, what is there? The crisis in the airlines would be a shortage of Biscoffs.
I don't know what that means.
I mean, that would stop the whole system. It would just shut down airlines across the world.
See, the ones I miss most on Southwest were the plain, what were they called? Plain crazy cookies or something. They were animal crackers, is what they were. But they called them plain I forgot something, but every time I flew on Southwest over the last couple of years, except for last year, I'd say, so where are the plain cookies? And it's, oh, we don't carry them anymore. I went, what? Would you like some peanuts? I don't want peanuts. I want animal crackers. But anyway, so that's, I'm sorry, I missed animal crackers.
Yeah, isn't it funny? If you think back only a couple years ago, we used to talk about how the airline passenger experience has gone downhill and how, you know, flying the airlines, not that much fun anymore. And now you look at where we are now. You've got thousands of flight cancellations. You've got all kinds of delays. You've got to worry about coronavirus potentially. Airlines have to worry about lack of fuel, can't get food on the airplane. I mean, I think we were a heck of a lot better 2 years ago.
Careful. Be careful what you wish for. You might get it.
Well, which would be what?
We kept thinking it was going. It couldn't get any worse.
Right. Okay. And it has. And I kind of wonder, you know, will all these supply chains and all of our industries ever get back to what we thought were normal? Or is this kind of the new normal where we have, you know, just kind of infrastructure issues where, you know, things just don't flow as smoothly as they used to in the past?
Well, Max East, you still work with Mary, I think. What do you guys hear about the customer experience?
Well,
I mean, without giving away any cool secrets.
No, there are no secrets. Yeah, I don't know. I think that a sizable number of the traveling public is just happy to be traveling. And maybe is able to put up with a little bit more inconvenience, maybe just because they're happy to be traveling. But that won't last, I don't think, anyway. You know, the expectations of the traveling public are going to rise to the levels that, that you know, they were previously, pre-pandemic. And I think the airlines and the whole industry is really going to struggle with you know, how to recover, and you know, like we were saying, it's not just this industry, every industry. I mean, as I've been traveling, I think I got 3,000 miles so far on this trip. There are help wanted signs out everywhere. Nobody can get enough people. Hotels I've been at, you know, services are scaled back because they don't have enough employees. I don't know where they've all gone, but they're not, you know, a lot of people left and they're not coming back, or at least not right away. And, you know, the airlines have the same issue with the, you know, the fuel that we were talking about. You need truck drivers to transport fuel, as well as a lot of other positions. And the workforce is just not up to the levels that it needs to be to provide the service required. So, I don't know. I think we have to be somewhat flexible, or try to be, but we've got to get it. First of all, we've got to get it back on track. But the other thing I think is we need to focus a little on having systems, having processes that are susceptible, highly susceptible to these kinds of disruptions and perturbations. You know, maybe we've gotten too lean. There are some people that are saying, you know, lean manufacturing has taken us down this path just in time. Well, when the supply line dries up or contracts, you know, you're kind of dead in the water. And that's what we're seeing. But
so are you asking for patience from the American public?
I think the American public has a little bit of patience now, again, because they're just so eager to try to get out and do something, but that won't last very long at all. And so the you know, the airlines and industry needs to get back on track quickly. You know, those that do are going to be at a competitive advantage, and those that don't, you know, are going to have problems retaining their market share, I think. But it's just my opinion.
Well, I think we can solve the problem quickly and easily. And all we need to do is encourage everyone to just take one additional job. So if you're sitting on the couch and you have no job as you're listening, go out there and get a job. If you have one job, take a second job. If you have two jobs, get a third job. We'll get our way out of this in no time at all.
There we go. All right. What's up with the geeks?
That's actually pretty good. I'm sorry. That was actually pretty good. Okay. Sorry. What's up with the geeks?
What is up
Who's
with the
first?
Geeks? All right. Max Trescott.
How are the geeks up?
Yes, Max, what's up with you?
Oh, I have been incredibly busy. I have been cranking out the shows on Aviation News Talk. I just counted 4 have gone out in the last 15 days, so just barely over 2 weeks. One was mountain flying, which is a pretty important topic. We had a crash up here at Truckee Lake Tahoe, a couple of them this summer already, so I wanted to get that show out. Another one was leaning for high density altitude. So most piston engines, not the turbocharged ones, but most of them need to be lean before takeoff if you're in high density altitude. And I knew that there were a lot of differences, but as I started researching it, I found probably at least 5 different ways to lean, you know, different kinds of aircraft. And some of them are, you know, not well known. Some of them aren't even correct in the POHs that I looked at. So, you know, very good topic for anybody who wants to know how to properly lean their engine prior to takeoff from mountain airports. And that one kind of struck me because I ran across an issue where someone took off from a mountain airport and didn't lean and was surprised that the engine was kind of stumbling. Well, gosh, you know, when you're drowning it in fuel, the engine has a hard time working. I also talked last week with Catherine Cavagnaro. She was the 2020 CFI of the year. And that was all about PIO, pilot-induced oscillations, which you can get into if you're usually fast and kind of bounce the landing a little bit. And this week brought out an episode on circling approaches. We had a crash at Lake Tahoe in late July, which was a jet that crashed while doing a circling approach to land, which is an IFR procedure. And there are just a surprising number of bear traps that will bite pilots in circling approaches. I mean, I think the concept sounds very simpler. Hey, I fly an approach to one runway, and when I get close to the airport, I maneuver around and land on another runway. Yep, simple concept. And yet, there are just so many bear traps that can bite you. And, you know, it shows that this pilot who had 14,000 hours, yeah, somehow, you know, fell into one of those traps. At least that's what it appears. We haven't seen the NTSB report yet. So anyway, lots going on in the Aviation News Talk podcast.
So what's this with the leaning out? I mean, I'm obviously aware of that, but why do you have to lean these things? Why don't they lean themselves out? Why do the engines have to be manually leaned out? You don't have to do that in your car.
Interestingly, one of those aircraft, you don't have to lean out. That would be the older Cirrus SR-20s because they had an altitude-compensating fuel pump in them. So when you were at full throttle, as you climbed, it would just lean automatically the higher you went. But most aircraft, except for the turbocharged ones, if you don't lean, you're going to have progressively less and less air as you climb, and then you're going to have an excessively rich mixture. So there is an ideal mixture of, or kind of an ideal ratio of fuel to air, and most airplanes are set up, you know, at sea level to do that without hardly any adjustment. But as you get higher and higher, that ratio gets out of whack. And, you know, different airplanes have different kinds of instrumentation, and so there are just a lot of different ways to lean for the optimal point prior to takeoff from a mountain airport.
Hmm. These things aren't fuel injected?
Some are, some aren't.
I mean, if it's running on carburetors, I can see that, but I guess. But, I mean, fuel injected motors, you know, they measure the air mass, or at least some of them do. And, you know, adjust the mixture based on the mass of the air entering the engine. But aircraft aviation engines don't do that?
Most of them don't.
Hmm. Well, what's the matter with these guys? Let's get with it.
I mean,
welcome to Aviation Engine Talk with Max and Max.
We should start a new podcast.
There you go. Well, oh, you know God. What? We probably don't have enough of them out there. Let's do that.
Okay.
But you know, Max, I know this sounds kind of crazy, but I can remember many years ago a fellow that I knew very well who had a Champ, which was a little 105, it was 100 horse, 105 horse Lycoming in it. Just carries 2 people, flew the damn thing all the way out from Chicago, from a place I know to Colorado, and when they were taking off from Colorado Springs, which is 6,200 feet or something like that, he didn't know nothing about no leaning. Mm. Nobody ever taught him nothing about leaning. And he's rolling down the runway and rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. Finally eased the stick back and said, okay, this isn't what it's supposed to do, climbing at maybe 200 feet a minute. And when that particular pilot got back home, they asked me, they asked him, why didn't you lean it? And he said, huh? It's crazy, the silly stuff that they don't emphasize. But then when you think about teaching somebody to fly and what you know kind of follows through over the years of your career, there's so many simple things that you learn. You go, I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting. And I don't mean just leaning, but I'm saying there's a bundle of things. But this one can absolutely take your life.
And you raise a great point, which is that people who live out in the flatlands may never have to lean their aircraft. Maybe they should, but they never get in a situation where it becomes critical that they didn't, you know, do it. You get out to the higher airports and, yeah, suddenly a practice that you didn't perform in the past suddenly becomes life critical.
All right.
So like the rest of the world, remember to lean in when you're flying your airplane.
There you go. Yeah. And get an extra job, too.
That's right. Helps the economy. Rob, Mark, anything going on in your world?
Nope.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
I think, you know, I'm beginning to think something. I think AirVenture was interesting, and I'm trying to remember something.
Uneventful?
Something occurred. Something uneventful occurred. I mean, for those people that didn't catch on when you introduced me, I'm afraid I'm no longer with Flying Magazine. I won't get into the who's, the whys, or whatevers, except that the magazine was sold, and that's the way it goes when there's often new management. I'm between writing jobs at the moment, but also, you know, it's giving me some time to think about what I want to be when I grow up, and I think it's actually turning out to be pretty valuable and pretty interesting, and I think there's some great possibilities coming up.
Cool. All right. There's always possibilities.
Good time to jump in. That 2024 election cycle is just around the corner.
Yeah. All right. You kind of weren't supposed to say anything yet.
Spill the beans.
I mean, boy, I mean, now I'm going to have to be answered.
Mark your calendars for 2024. Yeah. That would be Rob Mark.
I mean,
Rob for president.
Make a mark for president. Make a mark to improve government.
I think you got your new campaign advisor, Rob.
At least to make it more humorous, we could use that.
Right. So, and all that stuff, I think that's really good stuff.
Good.
But anyway.
All right. And David, things cranking along at the American Helicopter Museum?
They are. We finally set up one of our newest exhibits. We have a pair of Kitty Hawk flyers that we got late last year that now are on display. The Kitty Hawk is a eVTOL single-person aircraft that was designed to only require 2 hours of learning to fly. And they produced a little over 100 of them, and we have two of them. They subsequently have gone taken out of production to focus on more eVTOL urban air mobility vehicles. So they're interesting. And we are getting prepped for October, where we've got a month-long celebration of our 25th anniversary. We started in 1996. We will have a Tuskegee Airmen exhibit for 8 weeks. We will be debuting our latest restoration, which is a Sikorsky R6 called the Gander Express, which is the first helicopter that the Coast Guard used to recover people from an airline crash. And we will be doing our STEM weekend. And of course, I'm trying to get the store up to running. And this weekend on Sunday, believe it or not, is World Helicopter Day. So you enjoy that thought that, you know, if it wasn't for helicopters saving lives, you know, that's why one of the slogans of the museum. So we look forward to World Helicopter Day. And next week, don't forget, is National Aviation Day, or Happy Birthday, Mr. Wright.
All right. Very good. Very good. Well, we have an Across the Pond segment from our friend Peter Johnson. So let's listen to that.
Hi, Tim. Welcome back across the pond.
Hello. Good to be back.
It's delightful to have you back. It's been a very long time since we've been on the Airplane Geeks. But more relevant and more recent is congratulations are in order. 2021 Aerospace International Media Awards. You won Best Commercial Aviation Submission. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks for that. That was a real surprise to me. Some very stiff competition there. Completely didn't expect it. It's still sinking in.
Well, we'll put some links to the article in the show notes, and it was titled Airbus Spearheads Hydrogen Moonshot, and it is, of course, in Aerospace Magazine, where you are, of course, the managing editor for that publication. So we'll put a link in there. But just quickly before we get onto a topic I wanted to talk about today, it's a really interesting dynamic that Airbus are looking at hydrogen to power future aircraft. Do you think there's legs in this, Tim?
They seem to be, yeah. They've got a lot of buy-in from the French government, from European governments to make this happen, and that's what they need. They really need sort of buy-in from all the stakeholders, because you imagine the level of change you'd have to have for the infrastructure to happen is quite large. So, and one of the things it's been done around is it's being kind of based around kind of the French government, another government, sort of a European government, sort of helping out the aviation industry. Or, you know, we'll help the aerospace industry out, but in return, we want you to accelerate, you know, sustainable aviation technologies. So there's a lot of that happening in Europe at the moment.
Okay, thanks for that, Tim. But more recently, you published an article about flight safety, but it was really driven by the growing trend of disruptive passengers and flight rage that we're starting to see in the industry. Very sadly, 2 months ago, we saw in the UK that enormous punch-up at Luton Airport. But this is very common now, isn't it? We're seeing an awful lot of this in the US in particular. Attacks on flight attendants, airline personnel, pilots. Tell us a little bit about this article and why you wrote it.
So, yeah, so this is a bit of a news comment here. So, I mean, you know, it's great that people are getting back in the air. It's great that the airlines are flying again. But what seems to be happening is air rage was a problem before the pandemic, and it seems to come back with a vengeance. And now we're getting it's sort of tied in with mask wearing. So obviously, pre-pandemic, people are nervous about flying. Sometimes they drink a bit too much. They get on aeroplanes. And they get into fights about arguments about sort of seats, who's sitting where and when to use the toilet and stuff like that. So, but now there's an extra pressure on it now because of wearing masks and the idea that you're getting on a plane and you're trapped there in, you know, between two places. You can't get off. You can't leave the aircraft if someone there is, you know, refusing to wear their mask. And this, I think, is what's driving along with the kind of idea of, you know, the kind of freedom and personal, you know, individual kind of choice of the people who don't want to wear masks, whether they sort of say they've got a health reason, whether they sort of say, you know, I'm not wearing a mask on principle. So it's really causing a massive spike. You know, the FAA is sort of saying it's the worst it's ever been.
Yeah, we've seen fivefold. I think they were talking about fivefold increase.
They're talking about, you know, mandatory unarmed combat training for flight attendants.
And so
this it's kind of a link, sort of separate but linked in a way, to some work the Royal Aeronautical Society's Flight Operations Group had been doing on people leaving their baggage bit behind in accidents.
Safety.
So by themselves, you know, a person who is, you know, a menace on the flight desk or, you know, gets into a fight or something, you know, it's going to delay your flight. It's inconvenient. It's stressful and all the rest of it. But, you know, there's locked flight deck doors. It's not sort of like, you know, that it's not a flight safety issue as such. But I think what, you know, the concern there is if people are misbehaving in this way and being disruptive, are they going to be paying attention to the safety announcements? You know, and we've got plenty of evidence before the pandemic that people were ignoring safety announcements, you know, keeping their sort of large luggage on the plane. And then, you know, when the aircraft had emergency landings or, you know, had to divert and things like that and, you know, hard landings, whatever, they were bringing their cabin baggage with them, you know. And again, partly is this is sort of experiences with airlines where the airlines would lose your luggage if you put it in the hold. Partly this is to do with low-cost carriers. So low-cost carriers, they want to save money. You know, passengers want to save money. You pay extra money if you put it in the hold. So obviously you're going to take it with you and you keep it in the cabin or under your seat. And again, I think partly also, maybe it's this sort of individualism of, you know, well, it's my right. My right to not wear a mask and to, you know, to take my, you know, I mean, pre-pandemic as well, we had people taking their, you know, their emotional support peacocks and their emotional support donkeys, giraffes. That's been cracked down on now. So They're separate. It's important not to say that they're the same, but I think there is a little bit of a crossover. Elf, you know, is this going to kind of also lead to that sort of behaviour as well? And are we the flight operations group report noted was, you know, the professionals had been watching this and for some time they'd been concerned about it, and they were just thinking, you know, it's just going to be a matter of time.
Yeah.
Before there is an unlucky accident where all the you know, the holes in the Swiss cheese line up,
yeah,
and there's somebody, you know, one exit is blocked, the other one's unusable, and then the one exit that everyone's going through, somebody trips over because Joe Bloggs has got a massive cabin baggage and it's blocking the way, and fire there on a plane spreads so quickly, and loads of people lose their lives because of an entirely preventable accident that, you know, could easily be avoided.
And the summary of the article is: enjoy the return to flight and the freedom of the skies, but don't forget to pay attention to that safety briefing and leave your hand baggage behind. There's links to the full Royal Aeronautical Society's Flight Operations Group paper in the article. I'll send those links over to Max to put into the show notes. But Tim, for now, thank you very much for joining us. Where can we find you online?
I can be found twittering on @RESTimR or the Royal Aeronautical Society's website at www.aerosociety.com.
This is Peter Johnson reporting for the Airplane Geeks from across the pond.
I always thought that outro sounded like something from the Beatles, but, you know, that's just me. But I just can't believe that we're not at a point where we're really...
So much for the band.
What just happened?
And we're out.
Yeah. Rob just dropped off. All right. Well, we'll wait for him to return. Oh, here he comes. Here he comes. Just a second.
Okay. I need a little recurrent training, as they call it. So the button that says Riverside, that's the one we're not supposed to click.
Yeah, don't click on that hang up button.
Yeah, okay. I didn't. At least I don't think. But again, I think it's funny that we are at a point where people are still saying people just need to realize that it's unsafe. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make fun of Peter's listener or his interviewee, Tim. But it's just that I think we're being a little naive because these people that keep doing it don't get it. I think that when they start fining them or something else, maybe they'll realize we're actually talking to you. And I don't know, because they don't seem to, they just don't seem to have all eight cylinders clicking.
Well, I thought Peter and Tim made some very compelling arguments. They certainly have changed my position. So, Max, tell me, what's the manufacturer of your camper? Because I'm not going to fly anymore.
Yeah. Off-grid trailers.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Just, and you can Google baby tank.
I think I'll just donate all my frequent flyer miles. You know, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Yeah, either that or bring the duct tape with you.
Don't they have a song about that? Baby tank. Tink, tink, tink. Okay, I maybe I got confused. I'm sorry.
I think you must have, but
that sounds like the shark song to me.
That's poor right. David, he looks like he's in pain.
He is.
Okay, sorry.
So thanks, Peter, for that. Congratulations again to Tim Robinson for the media award. That's really exciting, and we'll have all those links that Peter mentioned in the show notes. Now, we have a couple of shout-outs. The first one is there is a GoFundMe page for Launchpad Marzari. Max Trescott, maybe you can tell us a little bit about this.
Yes, this is something that I think was announced at EAA Air Venture. Grant Prowitz decided to put together a GoFundMe page, and it's really kind of cool. Folks who've been to Oshkosh have probably seen the big arch and the kind of the entrance to Air Venture, and they sell bricks in that. It's, of course, it's a fundraiser for the EAA Foundation. It helps support Young Eagles and some of the various other programs that EAA has. And so he decided to take the lead and raise money to have a brick in Launchpad's name there. Now they've got different levels of bricks. There's the cheap brick for, I don't know, something over $1,000. But he has decided to see if we can raise over $5,000 for the fancy brick. And it's already about halfway there already, which is good. And at the site, the grant posted something from a post that Launchpad did 5 years ago on Facebook. And I really like this. I mean, this to me was just... This was awesome. I mean, this resonated with me so clearly. I love AirVenture. And for anybody who's never been there, you just can't imagine what a peaceful situation it is. And you know, I've been there for many years, never heard an angry word. Everybody is just happy and having a great time. Launchpad wrote, "I have figured out AirVenture. It is Brigadoon, a city that rises out of the mist once a year. No one ages. Everyone is happy. You can eat, sing, fall in love. But you step out of the gate and turn around, it is gone. Only an empty field is where this mythical place once stood. Until next year, where it will magically appear again."
Yeah, that's that captures it very, very well. And we'll have a link to this GoFundMe page in the show notes at airplanegeeks.com/665. And encourage you, if you know, take a look, and if you're able to contribute, please consider doing that.
You know, as we were opening the show today and we're talking about Ready from the West and so on, he used to say, Ready from the Heart of, meaning the heart of Texas. And so I could kind of hear him saying that as we were opening the show.
All right. We have an email from our listener, Tom, who points out that the Pacific Air Show, which is coming up, I guess, October 1st and 2nd, 2021, and they're adding a two-night event. They're calling it the Afterburner Music Festival. So it's live music, Huntington City Beach, and it's the official after party of the Pacific Air Show. So that's going to be exciting if you're in the area thinking about attending. A lot of interesting musical acts, including Sammy Hagar in the Circle, Sam Hunt, and some others. So we'll have some links to that. PacificAirShow.com, and then for the festival, AfterburnerMusicFestival.com. You can check those out. And then we heard from our friend John Mollison, and he, of course, does the Old Guys and Their Airplanes, Well, he and the Distinguished Flying Cross Society have announced a live Q&A interview with Colonel Robert Sertin. He's a decorated Vietnam War B-52 navigator, I guess, former POW. And he's going to include some educator kits for watch parties and things like that. So this is a really educational kind of event. And we'll have some information about that on the website as well. And thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. A little bit of a short episode, but as I mentioned before, we're putting guests into the pipeline, and we'll return to that format shortly. You can find us at airplanegeeks.com. Show notes, as I mentioned, we have the shortcut link, the direct link to the show notes at airplanegeeks.com/665 for the episode number. And, of course, you can always reach us via email. Just write to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. All right, David Vanderhoof, well, where do we find you?
Well, of course, you can always find us on the Slack listener team, and you do that by sending us an email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and we'll send you an invite so you can join the fun there. I don't remember what the last count was, but we've got quite a few now people that are in there and have a good conversation and enjoy swapping stories and such and talking about events. So if you have an event coming up that's an aviation event, you can send it to the geeks@airplanegeeks.com. Or Max, the calendar is
avgeekfests.com. And you can, there's a little form there. You can enter in any events in your area or others that you know about that aren't in the calendar and make those visible to AvGeeks worldwide.
And last but not least, I know everybody hates me when I say this, but if you can spell Vanderhoof, you can find me on social media.
Very good. And Max Trescott, how do we find you?
I can spell it. I can spell it. In my sixth grade homeroom class, the girl behind me was named Vanderhoof.
Really?
Absolutely. Yep. Verla still lives in northern Pennsylvania. She married someone else from my class, George Bryant. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
You've got a really good memory, I swear.
We talked at the beginning of the show about getting the band back, and I just want to make sure I'm clear on this concept here. Mm. Are you telling us Rob is not just back for this show, but he's back for good? Is that really what's happened here?
Well, there's for good and there's for good. So
if he's bad, it's not for good. If he's good, it's for good.
For the foreseeable future, maybe.
Did you tell me that, Max? I thought you were just looking for someone to come here and annoy David. That's what you told me.
Well, that's what I told you.
Did you not read the fine print in your contract?
Oh,
you know you're going to nullify the whole payment process for, you know, Rob, if you're not careful.
That's probably true, and I can't afford to lose much more money. So I got it. Yes, sir. Whatever you say.
And we can find you where?
Certainly find me at jetwine.com and Jetwine anywhere really on social media. And who knows where very soon.
Cool.
And Rob,
I mean, if you do know where, what I mean is if you do know where, tell me because I'm not completely sure.
All right.
Well, it's a great opportunity if someone wants to hire a writer, give a call to Rob. And just to close out on my side here, please check out aviationnewstalk.com. And if you want to shoot me an email, just click on contact at the top of the page.
Yes, of course. All right. And you can find me at 30,000feet.com, all words. I've got links there to where you can find me on social media. I've also got my pathologically giant listing of aviation podcasts. Just be forewarned when you visit the website. You know, it kind of harkens back to like about 1998 in terms of what it looks like. But hey, it works. So
and one heavily armed recreational camper.
Yes. Maybe I should put that on that. Maybe I will. Anyway.
So if you want to know what life was like in the last century, you're going to want to go to 30,000feet.com.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Keep the blue side up.
Night, everybody.
And thanks for listening.